This is the second lecture from the collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Approaching the Mystery of Golgotha. Lecture 2 is entitled Christ at the Time of the Mystery of Golgotha and Christ in the 20th Century, given in London, May 2nd, 1913. The mystery of Golgotha is the most difficult of all mysteries to understand, even for those already advanced in spiritual knowledge, and is the most easily misunderstood of all truths to which human beings can relate. This mystery was a powerful impulse in the development of humanity on Earth. It was a unique event in the evolution of the Earth, one that had never happened before in the same way and will never happen again in the same manner. Human understanding is always looking for a standard, for a comparison in relation to which things can be understood. But something that is incomparable cannot be compared. Because it is unique, it is understood only with difficulty. We have tried in the spiritual scientific movement to characterize this mystery of Golgotha from different perspectives. New points of view can constantly be chosen, and new characteristics continually brought forth to describe this mighty event in the evolution of humanity. A new perspective of this sort will be presented here today. In particular, attention will be drawn to what can be called, in a certain sense, the renewal of the mystery of Golgotha in our time, in our present cycle of humanity. If we want to understand the mystery of Golgotha in depth, we should not regard it as something entirely separated from the whole evolution of humanity, as an object of consideration only for its duration of 3 or 33 years. Rather, we should consider why and how it came to pass precisely in the fourth post-Atlantean age, the so-called Greco-Roman cultural period. We should also take into consideration that it was prepared during the entire development of the ancient Hebrew people. What took place in the human sphere in the fourth post-Atlantean age is highly important for the mystery of Golgotha, and also, of considerable importance, is what was prepared over the entire course of ancient Hebrew culture. The veneration of Yahweh. First, it is important to understand who the being was that revealed himself in the times of the ancient Hebrews under the name Yahweh. Human beings today are, above all, beings who develop their intellect in the context of what affects their reason and their capacity of understanding, what develops their intellect. They love to understand things from an intellectual point of view. However, the moment one crosses the threshold, from the world of the senses to the supersensible world, the possibility of understanding reality exclusively with intellectual means ends. Human understanding can render good service on earth, but the moment one enters the supersensible world, it is no longer sufficient as a means of acquiring knowledge, although it can still be a useful tool. Human understanding is above all fond of making distinctions. To understand something requires a definition. Those among you who have attended my lectures relatively often will have noticed the lack of almost any kind of definition. One cannot comprehend the objects of reality through definitions. There are, to be sure, good definitions and bad definitions, definitions that are comprehensive and others that are less satisfactory. Definitions are necessary to understand earthly matters. But if one wishes to understand things that pertain to reality, namely things that pertain to the supersensible reality, then one cannot make definitions. One must describe, characterize, depict, for it is necessary to consider facts and entities from all points of view. Definitions are always one-sided, and remind a person who has studied such things of the logic of the ancient Greek philosophical school that once sought to define what a human being is. To give an idea of a human being, the following definition was proposed. Quote, a human being is a two-legged creature without feathers, unquote. The next day, someone brought in a plucked rooster and said, quote, this is a two-legged creature without feathers. Consequently, it is a human being, unquote. One can often be reminded of this when definitions are demanded for something so many-sided and polyvalent that definitions are insufficient and one can only describe it. However, in order to be able to distinguish the different entities in the supersensible world, people find a definition desirable. They ask, quote, exactly What is such an entity? Unquote. The further one penetrates into the supersensible worlds, the more the entities there interpenetrate one another. There is no longer any boundary between them, so it is difficult to distinguish one from the other. Above all, we may not ignore the factor of evolution when considering the name Yahweh, especially when we relate it to the name of Christ. Even in the New Testament you will find, and I have often referred to this in my books, that Christ revealed himself through Yahweh, as far as he could, before the mystery of Golgotha. If one wishes to compare Yahweh with Christ, it is a good idea to use the image of sunlight and moonlight. What is sunlight? What is moonlight? They are one and the same, yet very different. Sunlight radiates from the sun, but in moonlight, sunlight is thrown back from the moon. In the same way, Christ and Yahweh are one and the same. Christ is like the sunlight, and Yahweh is like the reflected Christ light, insofar as this light could reveal itself to the earth under the name Yahweh before the mystery of Golgotha intervened. Moreover, when such an exalted being as Yahweh Christ comes into question, we must look into the lofty heights of the supersensible worlds for the true meaning. In reality, it is presumptuous to approach such an entity as Yahweh Christ with everyday concepts. The ancient Hebrews tried to find a way out of these difficulties. The human power of thinking is weak, but they attempted to form an idea of this exalted being. Attention was not directed directly at Yahweh, a name essentially regarded as not to be spoken, but rather at the being described in Western literature as Michael. Much misunderstanding can arise from this assertion, but that is unavoidable. One person could perhaps say that this might reawaken Christian prejudices. Another wants nothing to do with such things. But the being we may call Michael, who belongs to the hierarchy of the archangels, however we might wish to call this being, nonetheless exists, and there are many beings of this sort who belong to the same rank. However, this particular being, who is known esoterically as Michael, is as exalted among his companions as the sun is with respect to the planets, Venus, Mercury, Jupiter, Saturn, and so forth. Michael is the most excellent and significant being in the hierarchy of the archangels. The ancients called Michael, quote, God's face, unquote. Just as people reveal themselves through their gestures and facial expressions, so was Yahweh understood in ancient mythology through Michael. Yahweh made himself recognizable to initiates in such a manner that they were able to grasp something that previously their normal capacity of understanding would never have been able to understand, specifically that Michael is the face of Yahweh. Hence the ancient Hebrews spoke of Yahweh Michael as Yahweh, the unapproachable, whom one could never reach, just as one cannot reach the thoughts, sufferings, and cares that lie behind other human beings' public faces. Michael is the external manifestation of Yahweh, just as the manifestation of other human beings is recognized in their brows and faces. So we can say that Yahweh manifested himself through Michael, one of the archangels. The recognition of what we have described as Yahweh was not limited to the Hebrews. It was far more widespread. And if we investigate the 5 centuries before the Christian era, we find that during this whole time, a revelation took place through Michael. We could discover this revelation in another form, in Greek philosophy, in Plato, Socrates, or Aristotle, even in the ancient Greek tragedies, during the 5 centuries before the Golgotha event. If we try to illuminate with the help of occult knowledge what really happened, we can say that Christ Yahweh is the being who has accompanied humankind throughout its entire evolution. However, during the successive epochs, Christ Yahweh always revealed himself through different beings of the same rank as Michael. He chooses to speak constantly with a different face, to turn a different face toward humanity. And depending on which one from the hierarchy of the archangels is chosen to be the mediator between Christ Yahweh and humanity, very different ideas and constructs, impulses of feeling, impulses of will, and so forth, are manifested we can describe the whole period surrounding the mystery of Golgotha as the age of Michael, and we can consider Michael to be the emissary of Yahweh. In the period that preceded the mystery of Golgotha, for approximately 500 years, and continued on for several centuries after it, the leading culture of humanity bore the stamp of Michael, so to speak. Through his characteristics, his power, everything that should have been bestowed on humanity at that time flowed into it. And then other beings came, other beings from the order of the archangels, who were likewise inspirers of humankind from the spiritual worlds. As was just mentioned, Michael was the greatest archangel, the most powerful, the most important. So an epoch like Michael's is always the most significant, or one of the most significant, that can occur in the development of humanity. The epochs of the different archangels repeat themselves, and it is a fact of greatest importance that each being from the archangelic hierarchy gives an age its fundamental character. Archangels are primarily the leaders of the different nations, but because they become the leaders of different epochs, and because they are also the leaders of bygone ages, they are in a certain sense also the leaders of all humanity. As regards Michael, a change occurred just before our present evolutionary cycle. Michael underwent a process of development. This is of the greatest importance. According to esoteric knowledge, a couple of decades ago, 1879, we once again entered an epoch inspired by the same being who inspired the age in which the mystery of Golgotha took place. Since the end of the 19th century, we may look at Michael as our leader. If we wish to understand this, we must consider the mystery of Golgotha from another point of view and ask ourselves, what is the primary significance in this mystery? What is of utmost significance is that the being who is distinguished by the name Christ went through the mystery of Golgotha and through the portals of death at that time. Never in the whole of earthly evolution could one speak of the mystery of Golgotha without considering, as the most important aspect of this mystery, the fact that Christ went through death. Consider the laws of nature. Much may be understood by studying them, and in the future evolution of the earth much more still may be learned. But we are mere dreamers if we do not recognize that the understanding of life as such is an ideal that can be understood only through inner development and never through the study of the laws of nature. There are indeed dreamers in our day who believe the true understanding of the principle of life will be attained in the fullness of time through scientific knowledge, but that will never be the case. During the course of earthly evolution, many laws are yet to be discovered through the senses, but the principle of life as such can never reveal itself in this way. Such a revelation can occur only through the methods of esoteric knowledge. Therefore, life appears to us as something that on earth is inaccessible to science. And just as life is inaccessible to human knowledge, so is it the case with death in relation to true knowledge, attained in the supersensible worlds. In the entire realm of the supersensible worlds, there is no death. One can only die on earth, in the physical worlds, or in worlds developmentally equivalent to our world. And all the beings in the hierarchies of higher rank than the human have no knowledge of death. They know only different states of consciousness. Their consciousness can, from time to time, sink so far that it resembles our earthly state of sleeping, but they can awaken again from this sleep. There is no death in the spiritual world. There is only transformation of consciousness. One who has risen after death into the supersensible worlds cannot experience the greatest fear a human being has, the fear of death. The moment human beings go through the portals of death, their condition is of such an intense sensitivity that although they can exist in a darkened state of consciousness, it would be very odd indeed to imagine that a person in the supersensible world was dead. Hence there is no death for the beings who belong to the higher hierarchies, with only one exception, Christ. However, for a supersensible being like Christ to go through death, he must first descend to earth. And this is what is of such immeasurable importance in the mystery of Golgotha, that a being who in his realm, in the sphere of his will, would never have been able to experience death, was obliged to descend to earth in order to work through the experience of death. Through the fact that this being underwent death in order to share this fate with humanity, a deep inner bond was established between humankind on earth and Christ. This death, as I have just emphasized, is of the greatest significance, above all for our present earthly evolution. What really happened back then is in respect to our evolution on earth has already been discussed often. First of all, a unique being, who until then had existed only on a cosmic level, united himself with earthly evolution through the mystery of Golgotha, through Christ's death. He entered the evolution of the earth at the time of the mystery of Golgotha. He wasn't there before. He belonged to the cosmos. But through the mystery of Golgotha, he came down from the cosmos and took bodily form on earth. Since then he lives in such a way on earth, is so much bound to the earth, that he lives in the souls of human beings on earth and experiences life on earth together with them. Hence the whole period before the mystery of Golgotha was only a time of preparation in the evolution of earth. The mystery of Golgotha gave the earth its meaning. When the mystery of Golgotha took place, the earthly body of Jesus of Nazareth, parenthesis, as we know from the various reports we possess, parenthesis, was given over to the elements of earth, and from that time on, Christ was bound up with the spiritual sphere of earth and lives within it. It is, as we have already said, exceptionally difficult to describe the mystery of Golgotha, since we have no standard with which to compare it, but still we want to attempt to approach it from yet another point of view. Christ lived, as we know, for 3 years after the baptism in the Jordan, in the body of Jesus of Nazareth, as a human being among the people of the earth. We can call this the earthly manifestation of Christ in a physical human body. How then does the Christ being manifest, since he laid aside his physical body in the mystery of Golgotha? We must, of course, picture the Christ being as an overwhelmingly high being. But although so exalted, he was nevertheless able to bring himself to expression in a human body for the 3 years following the baptism by John in the Jordan. But how does he reveal himself since then? Certainly he no longer reveals himself in the human body, since that was given over to the earth and now forms a part of it. To those who have, through the study of esoteric science, developed within themselves the possibility of looking into these matters, it will be revealed that this being can now be recognized in one of the beings belonging to the hierarchy of the angels. Just as the Redeemer of the world, this Christ being, although of such an exceptional loftiness, manifested himself in a human body during the 3 years following the baptism in the Jordan, so has he manifested himself since that time in a direct way as an angelic being, a spiritual being standing one step higher than humanity. As such, clairvoyance could always find him. As such, he was always bound to evolution. As true as it was that Christ, while incarnated in the body of Jesus of Nazareth, was more than a human being, so is the Christ being more than an angel. That is only his external form. However, in the fact that a powerful, lofty being descended, as we have described, from the spiritual worlds and dwelt for 3 years in a human body, the further fact is also brought to expression. During this time, this being progressed one step further in his own development. When such a being accomplishes such a deed while assuming a human or angelic form, he himself progresses. And that is what we have alluded to in the development of Christ Yahweh. Christ has reached the condition in which he will manifest himself from now on, not as a human being, not only through his reflected light, not only through the name of Yahweh, but directly. Here is the great difference in all the teachings and wisdom that have entered the earthly evolution since the mystery of Golgotha. Through the arrival of the Michael Spirit on earth, through his inspiration, humankind could now gradually begin to understand everything that the Christ impulse, the mystery of Golgotha, means. Earlier, Michael was the emissary of Yahweh, who is the reflection of Christ's light. He was not yet the emissary of the Christ being itself. Michael inspired humanity through several centuries, for approximately 500 years before the mystery of Golgotha, as indicated in the ancient mysteries and by Plato. However, soon after the mystery of Golgotha took place, and the Christ being united himself with the evolution of earth, the direct influence of Michael came to an end. At the time that those ancient documents we have in the form of the Gospels were written, as I have described in my Christianity as Mystical Fact, Michael himself lost the ability to inspire humanity. But through his companions among the archangels, humanity was inspired in such a way that much soul force was acquired unconsciously through inspiration. The evangelists themselves had no clear esoteric knowledge, because the inspiration of Michael came to an end shortly after the event of the mystery of Golgotha. The other archangels, the companions of Michael, could not inspire humanity in a way that would make the mystery of Golgotha understandable, which explains the contradictory interpretations of the different Christian teachings. The companions of Michael inspired much in these teachings, but they, Michael himself, did not inspire them. Rather, they stand in relation to his inspiration as the planets stand to the mighty sun. I think I figured this out. I'm going to read it again. The companions of Michael inspired much in these teachings, but then Michael himself did not inspire them. Rather, they stand in relation to his inspiration as the planets stand to the mighty sun. Now, in our time, another such influence is present, a direct inspiration from Michael. This direct inspiration from Michael has been prepared since the 16th century. During that period, the archangels who stood closest to Michael gave humanity the inspiration that led to the fulfillment of natural science in our modern time. The natural science of the present day does not come from the inspiration of Michael, but from one of his companions, Gabriel. This scientific inspiration tends to create a body of knowledge, a point of view that provides understanding of the material world alone and exists overall in relation to the physical brain. Within the last couple of decades, Michael has again taken over the place of this inspirer of science, and in the next couple of centuries, Michael will give the world something just as important in the spiritual sense, indeed even more important, immeasurably more important because it is more spiritual, as material science that since the 16th century has progressed from level to level. Just as his archangelic companion once gave the world science, so will Michael give us spiritual knowledge in the future. We find ourselves at the beginning of this. Just as Michael was sent 500 years before the mystery of Golgotha as the emissary of Yahweh, the reflection of Christ, to give that era its own stamp, just as he was the emissary of Yahweh then, so has Michael become the emissary of Christ for our time. Just as in ancient Israelite times, which were a direct preparation for the mystery of Golgotha, ancient Hebrew initiates could turn to Michael as the external manifestation of Yahweh, so we are now in a position to turn to Michael, who has evolved from the emissary of Yahweh into the emissary of Christ, to receive increasing spiritual revelation over the next two centuries that will unveil the mystery of Golgotha more and more. That which took place 2,000 years ago, which could be communicated only through the various Christian sects, and whose depths can be laid bare only in the 20th century, when instead of science, spiritual knowledge, the gift of Michael, will come into action, will fill our hearts with immeasurably deep feelings for the spiritual in our time. We will be able to realize that in the past two decades, a gate has opened through which understanding can enter. Michael can give us new spiritual light, which we may regard as a transformation of the light given through him at the time of the mystery of Golgotha, and people of today may stand in this light. If we can experience this, we can grasp the full meaning of the new age that is emerging just now from our own. We can take note of the dawning of a spiritual revelation which will enter the life of human beings on earth in the next two centuries. In fact, since humanity is freer than it was before, we will be able through our own will to advance to the point of being able to receive this revelation. Let me now indicate the event in the higher worlds that has led to this altered situation, this time of a renewal of the mystery of Golgotha. Looking back, let us recall what has probably often flowed through our souls, namely, what happened at the baptism by John in the Jordan when the Christ manifested himself in human form, visible to human beings on earth. Further, let us fill our souls with the thought of that occasion when the Christ, as far as outer form was concerned, united himself with the hierarchy of the angels to live since then invisibly on earth. Let us remember what has been said, that death does not exist in the invisible worlds. Christ, by descending to our world, passed through a death similar to that of human beings. Since he became again a purely spiritual being, he has always kept the memory of his death with him. As a being from the rank of the angels, however, among whom since then he has continued to manifest himself outwardly, he could experience only a diminution of consciousness. By means of what has been necessary since the 16th century for the earth's evolution, specifically the ever-increasing triumph of science, something that is also significant for the invisible worlds has intervened in the whole evolution of humanity. With the triumph of science, materialistic and agnostic feelings of greater intensity than had previously been the case penetrated humanity. Materialistic tendencies had existed even earlier, but never of the intensity that became predominant in the 16th century. More and more, when human beings entered the spiritual worlds through the portals of death, they brought with them the result of their materialistic ideas on earth. So that after the 16th century, more and more seeds of earthly materialism were constantly carried over. These seeds developed in a particular way. Although Christ entered the ancient Hebrew race and was led to his death there, the angelic being, who has been the external form of Christ, has suffered a dissolution of consciousness in the course of the 19th century as a result of the opposing materialistic forces that rose into the spiritual worlds consequent upon materialistic human souls passing through the portals of death. And the emergence of unconsciousness in the spiritual worlds, as the result of materialism in the manner just described, will lead to the resurrection of Christ consciousness in the 20th century in the souls of human beings on earth between birth and death. In a certain sense, one can predict from this that from the 20th century onward, what humanity has lost in consciousness will certainly arise again for clairvoyant perception. In the beginning, only a few, then a constantly increasing number of beings in the 20th century will be capable of perceiving the appearance of the etheric Christ, that is, Christ in the form of an angel. For the sake of humanity, something that can be called a destruction of consciousness occurred in the worlds lying directly above our earthly worlds, in which Christ has been visible between the mystery of Golgotha and the present day. One can say that at the time of the mystery of Golgotha, something happened in a little-known corner of Palestine that was in fact the greatest event that ever happened to all of humanity, but of which little notice was taken by people of the time. If something like that can happen, can we be surprised when we hear what happened in the 19th century, when those who had passed through the portals of death since the 16th century encountered Christ? Quote, "the seeds of earthly materialism," unquote, which souls stepping through the portals of death since the 16th century have carried up to the spiritual world in ever greater proportion, creating more and more darkness, make up the, quote, "black sphere of materialism," unquote. This black sphere was taken up by the Christ into his being in the sense of the Manichaean principle, effecting a, quote, "spiritual death by suffocation," unquote, in the angelic host, among whom the Christ being has manifested himself since the mystery of Golgotha. This sacrifice of Christ in the 19th century is comparable to the sacrifice on the physical level in the mystery of Golgotha and can be designated as the second crucifixion of Christ on the etheric level. The spiritual death by suffocation that accompanied the dissolution of consciousness of the angelic being is a repetition of the mystery of Golgotha in the worlds lying directly behind ours, so that a resurrection of the previously hidden Christ consciousness can take place in the souls of human beings on earth. This return to life is in the process of becoming the clairvoyant vision of humanity in the 20th century. Christ consciousness can thus be united with the earthly consciousness of humanity from the 20th century on, because the dying out of Christ consciousness in the angelic sphere in the 19th century means the resurrection of direct Christ consciousness in the sphere of the earth. That is, the life of Christ will, from the 20th century on, be felt increasingly in the souls of human beings as a direct personal experience. At the time of Christ, a few people existed who could read the signs of the time and were able to understand the mystery of Golgotha. They could grasp how a great and powerful being had descended from the spiritual worlds to live on earth, passing through death, so that through his death his being's substances could be incorporated into the earth. Similarly today, some of us can perceive that in certain worlds lying directly behind ours, a kind of spiritual death, a dissolution of consciousness, took place so that a rebirth of the earlier hidden Christ consciousness could take place in the souls of human beings on earth. Since the mystery of Golgotha took place, many people can proclaim the name of Christ. And from the 20th century on, there will be a constantly increasing number of people who can communicate the knowledge of the Christ being given in spiritual science. Twice already Christ has been crucified. The first time physically, in the physical world, at the beginning of our era. And the second time in the 19th century, spiritually. Twice already Christ has been crucified, the first time physically in the physical world at the beginning of our era, and a second time in the 19th century spiritually, as I have described. One could say that humanity experienced the resurrection of the Christ being's body then. From the 20th century on, it will experience the resurrection of Christ consciousness. What I have only been able to suggest in a few words will gradually penetrate human souls, and the mediator, the emissary, will be Michael, who is now the emissary of Christ. Just as he led human souls in earlier times, so that they could understand the movement of the Christ being's life from heaven to earth, so is he now preparing humanity to become capable of experiencing the movement from the state of unconsciousness to the state of consciousness. And exactly as most people at the time of Christ's life on earth were incapable of believing what a mighty event took place in the evolution of the earth, the external world in our time is striving to increase the power of materialism, and will continue for a long time to regard what we have discussed today as fantasy, idle dreaming, perhaps even foolishness. Moreover, that is how they will regard the truth about Michael, who is now beginning to reveal Christ anew. Nonetheless, many people will recognize that what is just now rising is like the dawn, and that what will pour into human souls in the coming centuries is like a sun. For Michael can always be compared to a sun, and even if many people will not recognize this new Michael revelation, it will nonetheless spread over humankind. This is what can be said about the relationship of the mystery of Golgotha, which took place at the beginning of our era, and the mystery of Golgotha as it can be understood today. Let us make these feelings our own, recognizing that it is the only way we can become true spiritual scientists. From time to time, other revelations will come our way, to which we must keep an open mind. Would it not be particularly selfish to keep these feelings exclusively for our own satisfaction? Let us rather feel that it is our serious duty, as spiritual science teaches us, to make ourselves willing tools for this revelation. Although in humanity as a whole we are only a small society, attempting to understand this new truth about the mystery of Golgotha, this new revelation of Michael, we are building up a new power that does not depend in the least on our belief in this revelation, but rather depends entirely on the revelation itself, on truth itself, and nothing else. Then we will recognize in all calmness that only certain among us are prepared to explain to the world, as far as it is willing to listen, that from now on there is a new manifestation of Christ. But we want to be ready to recognize it. We want to belong to that tiny circle that is willing to help it grow and become lasting. We want to build on the inner power of such a revelation, so that it may spread out among the rest of humanity, for this knowledge will eventually belong to everyone. This is what we call wisdom. It is what many call foolishness. To be firmly present, we need only to remember today that the present time is the time of the second revelation of Michael, and to remember also what was said by one of the ancient initiates, Paul, at the time of the first revelation of Michael, quote, "What often appears to people as foolishness is wisdom before God." Unquote. Let us try today to draw power for ourselves from feelings of this sort, from spiritual knowledge of the sort that must appear in many contexts in the external world as foolishness. Let us seize the courage to recognize that what appears as foolishness to people who rely only on the senses can be wisdom and light, as well as a clearer understanding of the supersensible spiritual worlds, toward which we desire to strive with all the power of our souls and our conviction. The end of Lecture 2.